Welcome to the Legal Nurse Podcast, where you'll get tips to expand your legal nurse consulting skills. Every week, you'll hear from experts from within and outside the legal nurse consulting business. They'll share their knowledge to help you grow. Your show is moderated by Pat Iyer, a legal nurse consultant with over 30 years' experience. So join our community, sit back, relax, and get ready to learn. Here's your host, Pat Iyer.
Welcome to Legal Nurse Podcast. This is Pat Iyer, and today I have with me Darrell Gunter, who is a graduate of Seton Hall University's Stillman School of Business. Seton Hall is located in beautiful New Jersey. He obtained his Bachelor's of Science in Business Administration with a concentration in marketing from Seton Hall, and also earned his MBA from the Lake Forest Graduate School of Management. Darrell is an adjunct professor at Seton Hall University, where he teaches consultative sales on the graduate and undergraduate level, and also lectures to the Rutgers Entrepreneurial Pioneers Initiative Program. Darrell is a digital publishing executive, and we'll talk some more in our program about that, what that means. And he is also one of the leading advocates of consultative sales, search platforms, semantic technology, mobile applications, and social networking in the digital information age. He's a frequent speaker and moderator at many industry events advocating the benefits of semantic search technology, mobile applications, and social networking. Darrell has worked for the leaders of the electronic intellectual property industry, such as Xerox, Dow Jones Financial News Services, Elsevier, Colexis, the American Institute of Physics, and Allerton Press. And he heads up his own consulting firm called the Gunter Media Group, which is at www.gunter.com. Darrell, welcome to the show, and I'm so pleased that you can be with us today.
Oh, Pat, thank you. I really appreciate this opportunity to speak to you and your audience.
I thought we would start with having you give a little bit more of your background and experience, and particularly as it relates to understanding the world of finding medical literature and authoritative references.
Absolutely. Interesting enough, I started off my career in the information space with Xerox and Dow Jones, and then coming over to Colexis, it helped me to understand the challenge of the sea of data that that the population, the general population, and the nursing population have in trying to find the most germane and relevant article to a particular search query that they have. Oftentimes, that when folks are doing scholarly research, they're trying to find articles that support their hypothesis, but also they need to find articles that are the adverse effect as well, because they want to make sure that they're giving their readers a 360-degree view on the topic that they're researching. Oftentimes, when people are doing a search, which Google's the most common, they'll do a search and they'll get a result of 90 plus pages. And typically most people will only look at the first one, two, or three pages. Now, there are more specialty databases out there that that the professionals use, but even then, the way that the results are delivered, they're delivered in a, what I call a vertical fashion, meaning that there's pages of articles that they have to go through. And sometimes what I found is that with semantic technology, you're able to really zero in and find the needle in the haystack. So this is currently a huge issue for not only the professional marketplace, but for the lay marketplace as well. Oftentimes when someone, let's say a researcher, is applying for an NIH grant, sometimes their grant application is rejected because of a paper that they might have missed. And that's why I feel that semantic search is so important in today's time. And we've seen where I did a demonstration of our interface, PubS 21, to Seton Hall's medical school library. And one of the benefits she said to me was that, oh, you mean if people don't have to learn the mesh terms, they could just cut and paste an article? I said yes. I said, now, that doesn't mean that people should not learn the mesh terms. They really should, because that's very important. But it's helping them define the most relevant article pertaining to their particular search.
You mentioned a couple of terms that I thought it would be helpful for our listeners to know a little bit more about, and one of them was semantic technology or semantic search, and the other was mesh terms. Could you give us a little bit more of a background on how we can understand the use of those terms?
Absolutely. The mesh terms refer to medical subject headers, and it's an ontology that is used within the life science research community as to how to classify various different terms. Like heart attack is myocardial infarction. I think I'm not saying that correctly. But it allows you to have multiple meanings. You can have multiple terms with the same meaning. That's very important. Now, let's talk about semantic technology, the semantic web. Tim Berners-Lee, a gentleman from CERN, who actually did wrote the code to create the Internet, he had an article back in the late 1980s talking about the semantic web. Imagine, if you will, that you have all of these communities, and you're able to connect these communities based upon their relevant and their concurrent needs that they might have. For example, when you think about researchers in the life sciences, PubMed is a database that your audience uses quite a bit. PubMed is a database of scholarly articles that were generated by NIH-funded research. NIH currently gives out about $30 billion in grants every year. And the research from those grants, by law, the content has to be up on the web 12 months after publication. So what we did was to create a semantic view of the NIH's PubMed, which we created a product back in 2008 called BiomedExperts.com. And what it showed a profile of a researcher and their co-authors. But also, you could find other researchers who have not co-authored a paper with co-author A, but because that they both have done research on diabetes, you can connect them. So you want to connect content in context to each other. And so what the semantic algorithms allow folks to do is to be able to make these connections across the web. So if you had a researcher who was doing research on diabetes complications in the southwest section of the United States, and you had another researcher in Australia who was doing similar research, well, by using these semantic technology, we can connect them by subject area. And so that if they were connected, they could see that Professor Stanley in Australia is doing the same type of research as Professor Williams, who's at Los Alamos National Labs. And so you're able to connect them. It's almost like looking at your garage and knowing that you purchased some items from Home Depot and you need to fix something, but you need three or four of these items. You know they're somewhere in the garage, so you got to clean the garage out. Well, if you had a semantic web for your garage, you will know exactly where those items were, and so that when you needed to do a very specific task, you could find them. I hope that layman's version was okay. The description was okay.
Well, and it makes me think of a woman that I met when I was teaching at a hospital who said that she knew where every item in her house was located. And I came home and told my husband, who can lose a piece of paper while it's in his hand. And he said, how could she function that way And she said, well, how could he function with his level of chaos? It sounds like semantic technology eliminates the chaos and connects people in ways that they could never be connected before, to be able to precisely find each other.
That's correct. And you've heard of just-in-time manufacturing.
Well, I know just-in-time printing is something that CreateSpace does for their books for Amazon, where they literally print a book when they get an order.
Right. And that's what semantic technology enables you to do, is that when you have the need for a particular type of information, it can find it for you very efficiently and effectively.
Okay. So let's focus on, you mentioned PubMed in terms of a service that is free for users to be able to locate medical information. Are there four fee services that you're familiar with?
Oh, there are several of them. All of your top publishers, Elsevier, Wiley, Wolters Kluwer is very popular in the nursing community. All of them have subscription services that they can access. Either they can access it via their institution, if their institution has a subscription, or they can access it on a per drink basis, which is very expensive. Like, give you an example, if you wanted to buy a scholarly article off of Elsevier Science Direct, you would pay about $30, which is pretty expensive. There are some other options out there where you can rent an article for a day. Is an organization called Deep Dive, and then there's other platforms like EBSCOhost, might be very familiar to your audience, as well as ProQuest and Cengage Gale. So there's a number of different specialty databases out there that people would use to find information. Or you can walk into any of your land grant institutions as a citizen and use these services for free, on site at the university or within the library.
You said land grant. Are you talking about that being a public university or college?
That is correct, yes. Mm-hmm. And most of those land grant institutions or your very large institutions, whether it's Penn State, University of Pennsylvania, Rutgers, as we have here in New Jersey, those institutions are open to the public for the public to use.
You know, I ran into that issue when I was running my business in New Jersey, where I'd want to go to a large university hospital. There was one not far from me called Robert Wood Johnson. And in the beginning,
yes.
When I was going to Robert Wood Johnson, it was no problem of I'm off the street and I'm a nurse. And they began tightening up the access to the library and starting to demand credentials in order to be able to use the library, like an employee card, which I clearly didn't have. I wonder if that's a trend, or maybe it was just their particular regulation.
Well, Robert Wood Johnson, are they now affiliated with Rutgers?
They're affiliated with UMDNJ, I think.
UMDNJ. Well, I think that policy would have changed by now, because that's public. That's, you know, it's publicly funded university. So you know, you should be able to walk in there to use the facilities. When I was at Elsevier, I ran the Americas for Elsevier, and my group, we did a consortium license for all the libraries, academic libraries in New Jersey, where they would get access to each other's content. And I think it was called the Vail Consortium at the time. And but citizens should be able to walk into any of those universities to use those facilities.
Before I continue with the show, I want to draw your attention to a resource that relates to our topic. That's my book, How to Analyze Medical Records, A Primer for Legal Nurse Consultants. It's the third in the series that I created called Creating a Successful LNC Practice. It covers the pros and cons of electronic medical records, including how they introduce risk into the documentation of patient care. Use the book to discover tips and techniques for organizing paper and electronic medical records, which are the backbone of our business. you will gain an understanding of how to screen a medical malpractice case for merit and discover clues for detecting tampering with medical records. Two final chapters focus on how to polish your work product to create your strongest professional appearance. You will gain critical insights on how to strengthen your ability to analyze medical records to gain more clients and earn more money. You can order this book at http://lnctips/creating-series. That's all one word, creating series. So it's http://lnc.tips/creating-series and use the code LISTENED for a 25% discount on the price. Now let's return to the show. Could you tell us about the trends that you see occurring within the field of doing the type of research that we're talking about?
You know, the trends that I see is that we know that, you know, research is growing 3 to 4% per year. There's a trend of the business model of open access, and I think this open access meaning that you can get access to the article and you don't have to pay for it. And an author pays the article processing fees for that, or the author is sponsored by someone. And I think what trend you're going to see is that you're going to see a whole lot more information being available on a particular topic, and therefore speaks to challenge. The challenge is, how do you discern which is going to be the best research, and how do you manage this huge ocean sea of data? And that's where I think we're going to see a cry. We have seen a cry. We're going to continue to see a cry from the research community, whether it's the nurses, whether it's the RF1 researchers or the student body, or folks who are matriculating through getting their PhD. There is a desire to have better search and discovery tools that will allow them to find, to recall all of the information, but to do it with precision so that they're getting the right information in context. And I think what we're going to see at some point is what I call hypothesis-generated search, meaning that you'll be able to see where two non-co-occurring terms will co-occur in the near future. Let me give you an example. So in Alzheimer's, let's say the subject area was Alzheimer's, and you had term A, which has co-occurred with Alzheimer's, and term C has co-occurred in Alzheimer's, but terms A and C have never co-occurred in a scholarly article. What we're going to see in the near future or tools that are going to allow you to do hypothesis generation, where you'll be able to see a trend as to when those terms A and C might occur in the near future. And based upon the weighting, you'll be able to get a what we call an early spotlight, if you will, or maybe you should look at these two terms a little bit more closely because they might be relevant to what you're searching for your research thesis that you're working on.
I know in the past when you were doing a search, and we may be the last generation that will understand the concept of typing a word and then a plus sign and another word. One of the trends that I keep seeing is that you can just ask a question and do a search that way as opposed to figuring out which two terms you want to match up. Could you comment about that?
Absolutely. And what we're talking about here is that artificial intelligence on steroids, which is a good thing. So let's flash forward a few years. We're at the point where you have opted in to allow your personal search engine, which is encrypted and protected, so no one can steal what's inside your head, but you're able to share with it all of the searching that you're doing. So it's building up really a second brain, you know, on in the cloud, so to speak. And so when you do a search, it's going to know that you're looking for something very, very specific, and it will be able to bring that back to you. We're at the early days of that. Watson is probably doing a phenomenal job there. Our platform that we have, PubS 21, if someone was to read an article in the New York Times in the health section on diabetes, they could cut and paste that article in our search engine, and we will bring back a result set of peer-reviewed articles that match the relevance in context of that particular article. What you're suggesting is another two steps away, and we are getting closer, where you will be able to speak to the computer and say, you know, I'm not feeling very well today. This is what I ate. Can you tell me what it might be? And it will diagnose it for you based upon everything that you've told it, based upon scholarly research, based upon gray literature that's in the marketplace, and it'll make those connections. This is a story. This is a true story. Let's see. I married my wife, Deb, in 1993, and 2 years later, I went to play paintball here in New Jersey, and played paintball, had a lot of fun, and a couple months later, I'm in Chicago visiting with my wife's family, and I noticed that I had these pink blotches. Well, I had this bullseye. Didn't think anything about it. Then I got these pink blotches on my skin. And I'm light-skinned, so, you know, for me to see like pink blotches, it looks pretty weird. But I ignored it. I had just joined Elsevier, and we were doing our global sales meeting, and I was running a 102 temperature. But I took the trip to Amsterdam anyway, you know. Dealt with it during the whole week, came home, felt better. Then we took a trip to Disney where we took four of our nieces and nephews to Disney. And we had a great time, walked the parks, didn't feel anything, felt fine. The next day, I got back and I couldn't get out of bed. I just figured I was just tired from the trip. So the next day I go to work and I walk up the steps at Penn Station and I felt like I was about to fall out. Got to the office and told my wife. She goes, well, you know, maybe you should just eat something. Maybe you'll be okay. So that was Wednesday. That Thursday, same thing happened. I went to the doctor. Doctor said, come back on Saturday, Darrell. So I got back. I went back to see the doctor on Saturday. He says, you know what, I got this good friend over at, this cardiologist over at Overlook Hospital in Summit. I want you to go visit with him. Well, when I got to the hospital, they were waiting for me. It was the emergency room. It was like an ER scene where, you know, clothes were being ripped off. They were asking me a bunch of questions. Finally, they brought in an infectious disease specialist. And he says, let's go back a few months. What have you done differently in your life? Did you do something, an activity? And then I said, oh, I played paintball. From me telling him he played paintball, he figured out that I got Lyme disease.
Mm-hmm.
Now, imagine if we were having all this information and I could verbalize that into a system and it's going to say, oh, this is what you did? Oh, this is what caused that, my friend. So mm-hmm. we're not that far away from it.
Mm-hmm.
We're not that far away from it. And I think as we think about this Zika virus and all of that, we're going to find that these semantic analytical tools are going to allow us to ingest large amounts of information, make sense of them, and then come back with some probable causes and effects.
Well, you mentioned PubS 21 a couple of times. Can you tell us a little bit more about what that involves?
So PubS 21 is what I call a semantic search and discovery tool. For publishers, meaning that we're able to allow someone to cut and paste an article into the search into our search box. We'll create what we call a digital fingerprint of that article, which we understand the relevance and the importance and context of that particular article, and then we'll match that fingerprint against the corpus of data. So currently, PUB21 has, we've ingested all of PubMed. So we can bring back articles from PubMed that will match a particular health article. Now, the benefit of that is the preciseness and recall, that we're going to bring back articles that are precise and in context to your search. The other thing that PUBS21 does is that if there are 90 pages of results, if you wanted to actually look through all the 90 pages, you can do that. But what we do, we show you the top 20 articles, and then we give you a master fingerprint of the entire result set. And this master fingerprint is a visualization of concepts with weighted bars. The larger the bar, the more relevant in context that particular concept is to your search. So it allows folks to see all of the most important articles, but also concepts on a particular search term that they may recognize or may not recognize, which then allows them to do a deeper dive if they choose to do so. And so from there, when a researcher or a user sees a particular article, as soon as they click on that article, we'll send them over to the publisher's site to get the full text article. So if the publisher site recognizes their IP, they'll let them right in to get to the full text. Or if it doesn't, then they have options to purchase the article. But for the layperson, it's really cool because PubMed is a great database. It's a great database. And you know, our tax dollars have paid for it. But finding preciseness of search is a challenge. So PUBS21 is built on the PubMed corpus of data, but it's free. And it's free to the public to use. So, and the beautiful thing is that we immediately identify the search, the disease category that the person's searching. And I know my pharmaceutical friends are going to love this in hospitals, because we can immediately identify consumers and patients of a particular disease category that they can then present their information that's relevant to their particular search.
You know, as you were talking, I was thinking about one of the first times an attorney asked me to do a literature search on some specific aspect related to a personal injury case. And I gave him very proudly a 3-ring binder that was a 3-inch binder, and it was filled with articles, and I had them broken down and indexed according to topic. And he hefted this binder under his arm, and he looked at me and he said, "Well, this is really nice, but all I really wanted was just the most relevant articles."
Right.
And I was a little crushed, and I realized in hindsight, I gave him the entire cake, and all he wanted was a sliver. It sounds to me like PUBS21 gives you the sliver, but it's the best part of that cake that relates to what you're looking for.
That is correct.
And is this available now?
It's not available now. Unfortunately, it's behind our, we're on the Amazon cloud, and it's behind the firewall. And as folks go to PUBS21 right now, they'll see a very bad WordPress page, which was supposed to be changed last week, but my vendor hasn't changed it yet. So I'm going to have to beat them with my wet noodle. But it will be available. We're looking for a launch in the second quarter of this year.
Mm-hmm. All right. How can people find out more about you, Darrell?
I tell you, people Google my name, Darrell W. Gunter. I'm on all social media. I'm easily to find. They can also go to my website, which is GunterMediaGroup.com. And I'm available throughout the web. I also have a radio program called Leadership with Darrell Gunter, which is, you can find at iTunes University under Seton Hall University. And that show focuses on all the topics around leadership. And they can also call me directly at 973-454-3475.
Terrific. Well, thank you so much, Darrell, for being on the show. And Darrell's first name is spelled D-A-R-R-E-L-L, and Gunter is G-U-N-T-E-R, Darrell W. Gunter. He's been our guest today talking about semantic searches, medical research, and how we can harness the power of the computer to make our lives easier when it comes to looking for information and more directly serve our clients instead of giving them a three-ring binder, giving them links to articles. Thank you so much, Darrell, and I appreciate everybody who's been joining us today and listening to us. Stay tuned for our show next week, in which we bring in a new guest, and thank you so much for learning from Legal Nurse Podcast.
Thank you.
Thanks for being a part of this program. Check out our online training and books at LegalNurseBusiness.com. Expand your LNC skills with our resources. Also, explore coaching with me at LNCAcademy.com to get more clients, make more money, and avoid expensive mistakes. And finally, join our continuing education program and get monthly trainings at LNCCEU.com. You'll get two online trainings each month designed to deepen your knowledge and skills. And look forward to having you tune into our programs again next week. Use the code LISTENED to get a 25% discount on this product. You'll put that code LISTENED in the coupon code box during checkout.
We hope you enjoyed today's episode. Check out Pat Iyer's resources for legal nurse consultants on LegalNurseBusiness.com. Pat coaches legal nurse consultants so they make more money, get more clients, and avoid expensive mistakes. Check out her coaching program at LNCAcademy.com. Please subscribe to our podcast and leave a review on iTunes. We always are interested in your ideas for new topics. Please leave a comment on LegalNursePodcasts.com. Join our community and get notified of each new episode and receive the transcript of today's program. Complete the request form on LegalNursePodcasts.com. We appreciate you and your interest.